from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rum and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Republican Chris Voronis, Democrat Dan Johnson Weinberger, and Tea Party favorite Tim Krolaitis. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the new Museum of Broadcast Communications on State Street, that great street in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Well, tonight as we do this broadcast, the focus of the country and the political world is in Washington, D.C., where the president and congressional leaders, literally as we speak, are trying to find a solution to the debt ceiling issue, the debt, to deal with the debt. Obviously, it's been the dominant political story in this country for a long time. They're trying to put a deal together. There are some Republicans, primarily those who have received a lot of support from the Tea Party movement around the country. They're demanding of their leaders that they don't give too much in the negotiations and the compromises that people are expecting to come out of Washington. But again, there's fear in the air. And today on Meet the Press, Tim Geithner, who's the Treasury Secretary, he was out there. Bill Daley was on with Christian Amanpour on ABC. So the administration was getting their talking points out. And on Meet the Press today, Tim Geithner had a very he had a dire warning about the economy. And this is what he had to say. Kind of shocked a few people. He said, "This is still a very tough economy. For a lot of people, it's going to feel very hard, harder than anything they've experienced in a lifetime now, for some time to come." And then he went on to talk about the default. What would happen if there is a default? A default would be catastrophic for the American economy. The longer we go into July, the more risk there will be in financial markets. You'll see that reflected in higher interest rates and more concern and loss of confidence. And that was Geithner on Meet the Press. So tonight, I would like to begin because tonight, as I've said and promised, that whenever we have a discussion with Republicans and Democrats as it relates to campaign 2012, we always want to have a Tea Party representative at the table, and we have one here this evening. So let me begin, first of all, with you, Tim Krolaitis, who's our Tea Party expert from the state of Illinois, one of the organizers in the state. Do you believe that the Treasury Secretary, when he paints a very catastrophic picture of what will happen if the debt ceiling is not raised, do you believe all the ramifications, all dire, as predicted by him and many others, do you believe them when they say that?
What's the old saying? When a politician's lips are moving, they're lying. I have questions on whether we should believe them or not. I think the rhetoric that comes out of this administration is their biggest motivator is fear. So I believe that he's going a little overboard to try and fear monger so that they could push an agreement that they want.
All right, Dan Johnson Weinberger, you have had some questions about whether all politicians are telling the truth all the time, but I mean. Do you think Geithner is right in painting a very bleak picture if the debt ceiling is not raised?
Well, what he's saying is we can only borrow so much money, and we got to cut checks every year to government contractors and Social Security recipients and states and localities. And if we can't borrow any money, then we can't cut any more checks, and then things cascade down from there. So I have no reason to believe that when he makes it absolutely clear that I can't cut any more checks if I don't have any more credit. I don't think it's reasonable to say I think all politicians are liars, and I don't think it's reasonable to say, well, the Treasury Secretary is outright lying, so I'm no financial expert, but I believe him.
But if your goal is to dramatically shake up and to cut costs and to cut government, don't you have to get the attention of the people who are holding some of the reins of power? And sometimes you've got to scare them, and you've got to bring them to the brink. Because they don't wake up until they get to the brink.
Sure. And, Michelle Bachmann, I mean, some Republicans say there is no crisis. So what if we default? No big deal. I would rather, Michelle Bachmann said that. I would rather some
Barack
people,
Obama, when he was a United States senator, he voted against raising the debt ceiling.
I understand that. And,
was he wrong then or is he wrong now?
Well, look, I'm not a financial expert. I don't know the ramifications. We've never done it, right? We're in uncharted territories. But what is clear is that our budgets are unsustainable. And what the big picture issue now is, which Boehner was walking away from, is whether millionaire tax cuts, whether we're going to continue those in an unaffordable budget or not. I think that's the big issue right now.
Chris Voronis is our Republican. Chris?
Geithner is just playing Chicken Little politics. The reality is the concerns are real. Interest rates could go up, no doubt, but there is no drop-dead date. It's phony. It's gamesmanship on the part of Democrats. The reality is for every $1 that goes to debt service, we've got $9 going elsewhere. This is a good thing. It forces us to reprioritize the federal budget, where our money's going to go. So to say that after August 9th, I think, that the bottom's going to fall out is just ridiculous.
He said that the government will have no ability to borrow more money from credit markets. It would be impossible for the government to finance the $100 billion a week in maturing T-bills, while at the same time paying government contractors and sending benefits to those on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. He's basically saying, if we don't do this, we can't pay those bills.
Right.
Now, what would happen if that happened?
Debt service is 6% of the federal budget. There's money out there. We can pay our bills. The question is, does Washington have the political will to reprioritize those monies?
Well, so now
the money's there.
And so there is going to be. You're agreeing with what Tim said.
I believe
that the Treasury Secretary is lying.
I wouldn't say lying. I'd say this is a game.
Okay,
then you can say that.
Okay.
I'm saying this is a game of pressure politics that Geithner and the White House are playing very well.
So in other words, what Chris and Tim are saying is, well, just cut spending elsewhere to pay for the debt service is basically what they're saying. And the only reason we're having this discussion now is because the Republicans have said, no, we're not going to raise the debt ceiling. We're not going to do sort of the reasonable standard thing. We are going to force the question, cut spending to cover your debt service. And when Barack says, all right, well, share the burden. We can't afford these millionaire tax cuts. That's when Boehner pulls out. That's what's happened.
Can I remind all of us that it was Congress itself that imposed this debt ceiling to have the very conversation that we're having right now, mm-hmm. to have the very conversation that they're having in Washington, to force tough choices. We have a spending addiction, and we have to address that. That's the problem.
Right. I think Dan mentioned a little earlier that if we can't borrow more money, we're borrowing 40 cents on the dollar. We got to find places to cut. 77% on the latest Gallup poll, people say that there's a spending problem. 22% believes that there's a revenue problem.
I want to talk also more about the political will, and we will do that when we come back. 1-800-723-8029. We've got a lot of callers already on the line. They all want to weigh in on the big story. It's going on right as we speak in Washington, D.C. This is your opportunity to offer your two cents. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. I mentioned that Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner was on Meet the Press. Bill Daley, the chief of staff, he was with Christian Amanpour on ABC. And he was talking pretty tough today as well. And these are some of the things he had to say. First of all, he was talking about the big meeting that's going on tonight. The president is going to talk to the leaders again tonight. He is not someone to walk away from a tough fight. This is a very tough political fight, no question about it. But he didn't come to this town to do little things. He came to do big things. Then he went on to say, in talking about where the next things that he was talking about, he said, everyone I do formally, this was talking about the business community. Christian was talking about how Bill Daley has a good relations with the business community. And he said, I do firmly believe the one of the wet blankets on this economy and on companies, on the system right now, is a question as to whether or not our political system, whether or not our leaders can get together, whether they can solve big problems, or are they just going to kick the can down the road? And my question to you is, Tim, the perception of the Tea Party is that you want to send people to Washington to get things done. Mm-hmm. In your view, if somebody comes back who you've supported and they do not come back, are you going to take it out on them in the next election?
Probably. I mean, we put them there for a reason. I mean, when we vote for somebody, I think this election was an interesting election, is to say that there's a lot of new congressional, you know, congressmen and stuff in there that were put here for this reason. So here's an apex. People were concerned about debt. People were concerned about spending. Here's a chance to do something. The line is drawn. They're talking about it tonight. People are paying attention. So I would say yes.
Bruce, yes. That Bill Daley quote, I mean, can we really talk about kicking the can down the road? Because we've got a president here who ignored the debt for 2 years, then did a lateral to a commission he created, the Bowles-Simpson Commission, whose report that he ignored. A president who passed a budget in February that increased the debt, which his own Democratic Senate rejected. 97-0. Talk about kicking the can. There's like an amazing absence of leadership here. And to have your minions go on Meet the Press or This Week and talk about the sky is falling or this is a guy who came to do big things, the record doesn't match reality.
Dan.
We have among the highest unemployment we've seen in 25 years. And when Treasury Secretary Geithner said it's a tough economy, that's because for most people, wages aren't going up. And when you're in a tough economy and the jobs numbers came out really poorly as they did, and that's largely because 75,000 or 60,000 government public sector workers lost their jobs, because when you cut government spending, what you're doing is firing people and then increasing unemployment, right? So the debt and the deficit, and Barack's been very clear on this repeatedly.
No, but speak to Chris's points.
There's a long-term debt and deficit issue that needs to be addressed. But you can't do that absent the context of we have an economic crisis in a recession right now. And if you take the unemployment side out of the picture, which the debt and deficit conversation does, you're missing the point, right? The point is, if we increase our GDP, our productivity, by 1%, that does a tremendous amount, and I'm just parroting Barack now,
but,
in bringing down the debt and deficit.
But what were the Democrats doing when they had the White House, the Senate, and the House?
They were saving our economy.
Spending.
Saving our economy.
Spending.
You're damn right. Because guess what? When your unemployment is skyrocketing, you need – we should have doubled the size of the stimulus to get people back to work.
But in retrospect, could that be defined as kicking the can down the road?
No. Not at all.
Really?
No. Look, a thriving economy does more for our deficit than anything else. Our GDP, our percentage of GDP that already goes to government is among the lowest in 50 years. And the idea that somehow let's just divorce ourselves from when you fire teachers and cops and library workers, somehow you wonder why you have higher unemployment. This is a political problem.
Go ahead. Last word to you, and then we're going to go to calls.
We should ask the nearly 10% of Americans who are out of work what Dan's union bailout for public sector unions did to get them back on work.
Right.
The Obama policies have failed. The stimulus is an albatross. Everyone knows it. Americans are dead set against raising the debt ceiling with full knowledge of the consequences.
Let us go to Bryant, listening to us on KQMS in Redding, California. Go ahead.
Well, welcome, gentlemen. Several things. One, the money that they're trying to borrow in order to increase the debt is actually my money, not the government's money. And there's a lot of people who think that way. Secondly, in the stimulus that Barack Obama signed about 2 years ago, roughly?
Yes.
Give or take. One of the things that included was a tax deduction to the very millionaire over the issue of the jet planes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I always thought that was a little interesting.
Private jets.
Third.
That's incorrect.
Third, if you look at the situation in Wisconsin where they cut the tax rate and did a few other things, one of them was made the public sector pay for their pension. Just in one school district alone, where they had a projected deficit of over $400,000, the next day, because of the passage of the legislation in Wisconsin, it went from a minus $400,000 to a plus $1.2 million. Now, tell me, what is going on back there? Washington is out of touch with the American people. Barack Obama and Tim Geithner, who's a tax cheat to begin with, are liars. There's a lot of people in the United States, around 72%, that think that way. So either they get their act together and not pass that debt limit and force the cuts that have to be made, but they're going to find out, especially in the Republican side, they're no longer going to be in office.
Well, I think, one of the big, political questions that obviously we've been talking about for a long time on this program is how much leeway do the leaders in Congress, how much leeway do they have to move away from the Tea Party? I would say at this moment they have very little maneuverability. Would you agree with that? You're a moderate conservative. Would you describe yourself as a moderate conservative?
No, conservative.
But you're not a Tea Party person.
No, I embrace the Tea Party. I think the Tea Party is very good, brought a lot of energy to the Republican Party, and it showed in the election.
The red meat's coming out.
So you don't want Boehner to give an inch?
Look, this is a compromise. Both sides have got to give a little.
What are the Republicans going to give? Let's say you were at the table right now, representing, knowing everything that Boehner knows. What would you say, okay, I got to give a little bit. What am I going to give? What are you going to give?
Well, here's the thing to keep in mind is that the initiative is with the Republicans. Public opinion is with the Republicans. People want to see big concessions, spending cuts, coupled with raising of the debt ceiling. I think Barack Obama cannot afford to screw this up.
You didn't say. So what would you do, Chris?
So, these tax loopholes that are getting bandied about, first of all, are ridiculous. I think the Democrats, forgot their shame meds.
Are they ridiculous because people are trying to get rid of them?
Because it's classic demagoguery. And when Dan's first opening salvo has mentioned those tax loopholes, Charles Krauthammer said that if we collected the taxes on those jets for the next 5,000 years, it would only amount to what Obama spent last year. There's no money there. But you know what? It's a great, great
Add
talking
them up
point.
And there are.
It's a great soundbite. And that's why Obama's using it. And it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous
I'm gonna stick to it here. What would you give
so,
back?
So at the end of
Where
the day,
would you give?
Maybe these silly tax loopholes that don't mean anything, and the Democrats know it, maybe they'll be part of the package, coupled with maybe $1 to $2 to $3 trillion in cuts over the next 10 years.
Now, would you back away, Dan Johnson Weinberg, would you back away from any possibility of any kind of a tax hike, of any kind, at any level,
There's no
for
way
any reason?
The math won't work. I think everyone can be fair and acknowledge you can't close a $4 trillion deficit without any revenue. You need revenue. Hey, look, if it's up to
get the revenue?
Chris, if it's up to me,
where are you going to get the revenue?
Repeal the Bush tax cuts. Repeal the estate tax cuts.
That's not going to happen. Again,
right. Yeah. Why is it not?
Tell me something that is practical that's going to happen.
Thank right? God for the Tea Party.
It's doable. What is doable?
Here's what is doable and what we
are. The Tea Party is the immovable force in American politics.
Now, why is that, right? Why isn't the
well,
that, why
because,
are, why is
because
it,
you guys have failed
right?
to do
right?
what you
keep
have in, promised to do
I would,
for decades.
Keep in mind, they've got one out of three. They got the House, Not the Senate.
It's working pretty well for
him
right now.
Not the White House, right?
It's working pretty well.
Ultimately, here's the fundamental problem.
But right? You had it all. You had it all, and you didn't make it better.
Wait a minute.
If you had made it better.
Which we did.
Nancy Pelosi would still be the Speaker of the House.
What?
The masses did not believe that Nancy Pelosi was doing a good job. And so they decided they're going to throw her out. If you did such a great job, you didn't sell it to the American
people.
You didn't
sell well
didn't
enough
buy
to
it.
Say absolutely.
We got to pause. I want to get your reaction. And by the way, I promise we'll take more calls. 1-800-723-8289. From coast to coast and border to border, I'm Bruce Dupont. From Seattle, Washington, Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. In Washington, D.C. this evening, the president and congressional leaders are getting together to try to come up with some sort of a compromise, some sort of a deal to deal with the debt ceiling issue in the country and the economy, and not likely to have a final decision tonight, that's for sure. But again, they're working late on Sunday night, and so are we. And we'll be taking your telephone calls in just a moment. We have lots of callers on the line. Dan Johnson Weinberger is here. He is a lawyer in private practice, and he recently joined a brand new firm after, by the way, we should mention, a graduate of the University of Chicago, where Barack Obama was your professor. And your firm is?
Corey, Cotter, Heather, and Richardson. And I specialize in election law.
And you still do progressive lobbying?
I do. My lobbying firm is ongoing.
And also with us this evening is Chris Voronis. Chris Voronis is a longtime friend of Dan Johnson Weinberger's. They went to the University of Illinois together. And you have a new venture. It's ESOP Communications, which is your own communications firm. And what is your area of expertise?
It's issues management, public affairs, and reputation management.
And Tim Krolaitis also joins us. He is one of the leaders of the Illinois Tea Party, and in private practice, when you're not here pontificating on the radio, you are in the marketing business. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And what do you market?
Construction. I'm in the construction business.
Very good.
Industrial distribution.
Right. And Dan, you wanted to make a point. You shared with me that a longtime listener to this program has passed away this past week.
Yeah, this week a friend who worked at the State Board of Elections, Mark Grebin, an attorney, is a longtime listener, and every time I'd see him, he'd mention that he heard me on the radio and thought, you know, Bruce does a good job. He's got a fair show, so he appreciated the show, but a longtime listener, a family of Beyond the Beltway passed away, so rest in peace to Mark Grebin.
Right, and also extended condolences to the family of Bill Hamilton, one of the leading commercial pitchmen and announcers in the history of Chicago radio and television, the longtime voice of Polk Brothers, and a good personal friend who passed away while I was on vacation this past week. So our condolences to his family on their loss as well. Let's go to calls. Let's go to Algonquin, Illinois, where Ann is listening to us on WLS. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi there, Bruce. Well, first of all, to answer the question that someone asked as to what all those Democrats did when they controlled all three branches of government, or at least the both houses of the Congress and the White House. Well, they gave us that wonderful stimulus bill that we've been hearing more about some of the details lately that, as of I think just last week, it cost $278,000 per job for the basically handful of jobs that were created. So that was a lame brain idea. Then we had Obamacare, which, of course, was rammed down our throats. And if it was so wonderful, then I don't see why the Obama administration has been giving waivers to their friends across the country. But I think what we have to remember about this administration is that, particularly in the case of the president, he will say one thing and then do just the opposite. One of the most classic examples, I think, is the whole situation with GE and Obama's job czar, Jeff Immelt. I think Obama just last week was talking about, oh, we need to have more jobs done here in the States, not the sending them over to China. Well, GE has been making those toxic CO2 light bulbs in China. Uh-huh. And as
And they don't pay any taxes either.
Something like $100 in taxes they paid, yes. But they're tremendously big a company. So I think there's no reason for the Republicans, speaker, to move away from what the Tea Party wants. They're
well,
in control.
One of the things that you're at least touching on is, you know, all the focus primarily is on the differences within the Republican House between the moderate conservatives and the Tea Party, or the establishment Republicans from the Tea Party. But clearly, you look at the last several years, I mean, the relationship between the White House and the leadership in the House, which was considerably to the left of where the president, or at least right. when Rahm Emanuel was there, wanted to take the country. I mean, he didn't have everybody necessarily singing the same tune. And one of the big questions is, you know, whenever you hear the Republicans, and again, Dan, you've said it over and over again tonight, you know, when you had the power, this big, horrible, evil thing called the Bush tax, you know, tax cuts, you didn't repeal them.
Yeah, we should have.
You didn't repeal them. Why didn't you repeal them? Oh, that's right. You couldn't get enough Democratic votes.
It was a tactical mistake.
Well,
that's true. It was. It was a tactical mistake.
Then, I mean, my point is, when you have the power, you should be measured on what you did with the power. And, you know, you shouldn't be complaining if when you had the opportunity to stand up and do something, you did it.
The Bush tax cuts have got a new zealous convert in Barack Obama.
That's correct.
Who supported them wholeheartedly at the end of the year last year.
See, that's not, I mean, you know, that's not fair. When
and castigated his own party for them, too.
When you cut a yes. deal, see, this is the problem. This, when you say, oh, we want people to compromise and get things done, he said, I will reluctantly compromise and accept the tax cuts, which I don't support as part of a deal. Then to turn around and to somehow suggest that he's wholeheartedly supported is just not intellectually
honest. And said, this economy cannot afford tax increases.
Let's go to Jack on WLS in Chicago. You're on the air, coast to coast.
Hey, Bruce. Glad to be on, a longtime listener, occasional guest, and first-time caller.
Thank you.
Just wanted to ask a question about getting the deal done with the Democrats. Is it even worth being in the room when you consider Bush 1 and Mr. Darman, who struck a deal, and the Democrats frankly reneged on it, and never followed through with their cuts. But the Republicans were blamed with the tax increases. Aren't they playing from the same game book?
What about it, Chris? I mean, historically, isn't Jack correct? Not only did Bush 41 get in trouble by playing footsie with the Democrats, so did Ronald Reagan. When Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill got together to make their deal, the White House gave more, and the Democratic Congress reneged on half of what they promised.
The caller's right; they did renege, and the problem it's both parties share the blame here. More so, the Democrats, who are like philosophically wedded to the idea of spending in perpetuity. But to say like where does the blame go if we have no deal by August 9th, as I said, public opinion and the initiative are with the Republicans.
And
Barack Obama wants to wrap this up and not deal with it for the next 2 years.
Does the president, and you think he wants to do it for political purposes?
Absolutely. Okay. He's thinking real.
Does the president, why would the president say he's willing to explore Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security changes?
Right.
Which is the holy grail of the Democrats. Why would he say he would be willing to look at that and put that on the table? Isn't there great political risk in saying that?
You cannot ignore Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid if you're talking on the scale of $1 trillion in cuts to the
deficit.
Does he get credit?
Would you give him credit for doing that?
If he says
he wants to deal with a $4 trillion deficit cut and he puts that on the table, why is it unfair for him to ask Republicans to look at one of the things that's, you know, part of your game plan, and why don't you put that on the table too?
Yeah.
Isn't that fair?
It's so I admire him for proposing it. I'll give him a hearty congratulations if he follows through it. Washington has had a history of imposing spending caps and then reneging on them, passing deficit reduction acts, not authorizing them or following through on them. So, yeah, he deserves credit for putting the
you
table.
Give him credit,
I'd like to see him follow through on it.
No, I don't give him any credit. I think where we're at right now is we got our, as far as the Tea Party point of view, we got our feet dug in because we know that what's playing out here is politics. I'm going to make this clear. Dan mentioned earlier, but
is explain to me. You say it's politics. I mean,
yeah.
you're feeling your oats because you're in a position of power right now. But do you understand that if you're trying to get something resolved, that sometimes in a political world, both sides lose a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They lose a piece of themselves or their
right.
political ideology right. because they do something for the broader good.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, as a Tea Party member, do you understand that?
We do, but at the same time, there's a point in which you got to point to the problem, and people got to get real about looking at the problem and look at real solutions, and that's Democrats and Republicans. Now, to be fair,
and what's the real problem in your view?
The problem is spending. Bush went $600 billion. In deficits, okay? That's why he lost the conservative base of his own party. There's frustrations in him. The Tea Party didn't just come because Barack Obama popped up. Barack Obama tripled down on what Bush did. So that there's, you know, as much as the Tea Party likes to be castigated in a general sense, that's the firewall to start looking at this stuff seriously and saying, no more. We're borrowing 40 cents on every dollar. We're borrowing to spend.
But where do you want to take that first scalpel? Where do you want to cut it first? Because you
how about we go back to 2008? I mean, this guy went from $600 billion to $1.6 trillion. Now you're talking about we're going to have a $4 trillion cut over a 10-year period when you increase it $1 trillion a year. So that's a net increase of $6 trillion over a 10-year period. It's just, that's the problem. It's insanity.
I want to give you your opportunity, but we do have to pause. 1-800-723-8029. I promise we've got lots of callers on the line. We will bring them in as well as hearing Dan's response when we come back to Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont, coast to coast and border to border, taking America's political pulse tonight on the economy and the debt ceiling debate. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. The Republican presidential field, they are weighing in on what is happening in Washington, D.C. They're putting a lot of pressure on John Boehner and the House Republicans and obviously Republican primary voters that will be going to the polls in the not-too-distant future. They're going to be looking at and maybe taking their lead from the presidential candidates. And so a lot of the members of leadership in the House, they're a little bit concerned about where the candidates are feeling or coming down on this particular issue. And let's just summarize where some of them are. Michelle Bachmann, of course, who is a member of the House, she says unequivocally, I will not vote to increase the debt ceiling, period. Tim Pawlenty, he favors a balanced budget amendment, and that should be part of an essential trade-off to get his support for it. Mitt Romney said he could support a deal if it was accompanied by a major effort to restructure and reduce the size of government. That seems to be based on trust of whether or not you would trust the Democrats to do it. Ron Paul said Republicans should not accept any deal that includes a tax increase, and he calls it a ploy. So those are some of the presidential candidates and their response. Dan, you wanted to make a point before the break.
Right. Thank you. Just briefly, if we're talking seriously about how to attack the deficit, the military has been put off the table by the Republicans. That is a tremendous source of incredible waste that needs to be attacked. There's no reason why we're still in 150 countries around the world. And secondly, those special interest tax breaks, which is spending. When we spend $4 billion on special tax breaks for the oil industry, that's something they have to give us that the Republicans so far have been unwilling to give. That's the only tax increases left. So, we are not talking about general repealing the Bush tax cuts, which we should have done. Now it's whether we're going to repeal the spending on special interest tax breaks or not. And that's what the Republicans walked away from.
Look, I wonder if Dan would be open to repealing or reducing some tax credits for renewable energy that are out there. You know, the reality is there's a lot of irresponsibility going on with Democratic rhetoric right now. This oil tax break that we keep on hearing about is really to keep manufacturing here domestically. So I wonder if the Democrats have weighed whether they would upset their union friends if they got rid of these tax breaks. They were created for a reason, and I'm sure, no doubt, they won a lot of Democratic votes.
In other words, the Republicans said, keep the spending on big oil going. We want to keep that spending.
Yeah, in the same breath, right? Democrats talk about Benedict Arnold companies, you know, taking their business overseas out of the United States. Again, there's a reason why these tax breaks were created, whether you're for them or not. And I'm sure if you looked at the numbers, it's very bipartisan.
Let us go to Ken in Youngstown, Ohio, listening to us on WKBN, the Big 57, covering all of northeastern Ohio. Go ahead.
Hi, Bruce, longtime listener.
Good.
Bruce, I just want to say, these people that are hooting and hollering about raising the debt ceiling now, where were they at before when even the debt ceiling was, you know, at $5, $6, $7 trillion? Now all of a sudden, you know, they're blaming the president, you know, for carrying $3, $4 trillion, even though there's 2-3 wars, you know, going on off budget. And to me, when it was $5 or $6 trillion, it's, you know, just as bad as it is now, at $14 trillion. But
Ken,
now they come out.
Ken, you know what? You know what I think the answer is? You're right. I mean, it, you know, raising the debt ceiling was a perfunctory story every August. It got maybe, you know, 3 inches of coverage in a newspaper. I think the big difference is the Tea Party. I mean, the people that were elected to Congress decided that they were going to put their draw the line in the sand and, as Tim has said, dig in their heels about something that they feel very strongly about. So I think
where
the
were
big
they
difference
at before?
Is, well, my question to you is, Tim, where were they? It wasn't you were not politically aware of it.
Oh, I think we were aware of it.
I mean, you
it.
Were upset with you, I've heard you say numerous times on this program, you're not a big fan of George Bush.
Right, and that's where it started. It started within the conservative movement of what was happening in the Republican Party as they had the power structure, okay? By the time his presidency was ending, people were frustrated. I mean, and they weren't excited about McCain. Conservative, they felt betrayed, okay? Obama came into office, and he took that thing, and he went on steroids with it. So when people say, where were we? We were there, but we were caught within the party structure. There was no Tea Party. What happened is a vacuum occurred. That vacuum was filled. People had a voice. People had a way. Social networking and everything else, people had a way over the last couple of years to communicate with each other.
Mark in Austin, Texas, KLBJ is the station. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is just such a joke. How about we default, and then instead of taking money away from old people, China can't sell their junk at Walmart. We don't get tax breaks. Obama said these jobs are going overseas. We don't get tax breaks. The company's going everywhere. We don't defend everybody. We don't start wars everywhere. If you're not here legally and you have kids, you're off the dole. I think we could balance the budget real quick. I'll work for minimum wage. Give me just a handful of benefits. Minimum wage. Let's make something here and stop giving all the jobs to China and give them tax breaks to do it while they build up their military. And I'll listen off the air.
All right.
Well, we don't got the political will. And that's why when you're asking, why is it?
Do you want to go that far? Do you want to go as far as he did?
No, I don't think we need to.
Yeah.
But we need to do something.
Let me.
And we need to start
Stan.
Here's the question, and it's a Tea Party question. Are cutting spending on corporate tax breaks something that you want to see happen?
Yeah. I think everything should be on the table.
You know what we should
I think
do?
Everything should
you
be know, on the table.
We should follow Democratic advice and not have this conversation because it's trivial. That's what Clinton's budget director called these ridiculous corporate tax breaks for jets.
$4 billion trivial. Is trivial?
Trivial. Alice Rivlin said it. It's
$4
ridiculous.
$4 billion for
it's
oil tax breaks is
it's
not
shameful
trivial.
For Dan to persist in these Democratic talking points because everyone who takes a close look at it knows how ridiculous
They're
these
not
tax
ridiculous
breaks
at
are.
All.
They don't amount to anything.
On that note of disagreement, we are going to say farewell to our guest. Dan Johnson Weinberger has been our card-carrying Liberal Democratic this evening. Tim Krolaitis has been our Tea Party representative, and the ever-popular Chris Voronis, has been our conservative Republican spokesperson this evening. They will all be back for hour number two. We have a lot of callers from coast to coast and border to border. You'll hear them all in the next hour if you're watching us on television. See you next week. From Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Chris Voronis, Democrat Dan Johnson Weinberger, and Illinois Tea Party leader Tim Carlitis. Phone lines open 1-800-723-8029, 1-800-723-8029. If you'd like to email us a comment, the email address is btb@museum.tv. And for those listening to Coast on Radio, I want to thank Dan Propp for sitting in last week on this broadcast while I was vacationing in Italy, the beautiful island of Capri, and Barcelona, beautiful cities both, and enjoyed it immensely. Was there for a wedding and meeting with some friends, and it was fun, and it was hot.
Okay.
Very, very hot. By the way, I understand that the president and the congressional leaders, they spent 80 minutes with each other. That was enough. The meeting has broken up. So tonight on Beyond the Beltway, we will spend more time discussing this issue than the president and the congressional leaders did on Sunday. But they came to no resolution, as we expected they would not.
Back at it. You got it.
Politically, right now, just give me the short political answer. Who is winning this political battle for the hearts and minds of the independents who will decide the presidential election? Chris Voronis, we'll ask our Republican first.
The Republicans.
Why? Give me 30 seconds.
Public opinion is with the Republicans on this. People understand what the consequences of not increasing the debt ceiling, and yet they're still for it. And Barack Obama is motivated to do a deal because he wants to eliminate this from reoccurring in the next 2 years.
Johnson Weinberger, our Democrat.
I think the president appears to be more sincerely interested in a deal than the Republicans, and I think that that desire to have people of both parties work together and get along is what a lot of independents feel. I think that makes lefties in the Democratic Party unhappy because more Democrats like this sense of let's cut a deal, and the independents like that. And I think the Republicans have a harder line. And so if independents care most about I want people in Washington to get along and solve the problems for our country's good, I think the president looks like he's trying to do that more sincerely than the R's.
Tim, who's winning?
I would look at it as the Republicans winning right now.
Why?
Because I think the elections proved that people wanted to stop some of the insanity that's what's going on in the financial decisions in our country. And then you take a look, and somebody's digging their heels in. And right now it's the Congress. It's John Boehner. It's him saying no. He's no to more taxes. No to he's trying to get spending cuts to try and, you know, and that's what this last election was all about. And that's where Obama lost the moderates. And I don't think they're coming back if the Republicans could dig their heels in here.
But when you're looking at the president, there's two elections obviously coming up. There's the presidential election and then there's the congressional elections.
Right.
One of the things that I think some independents may like, and I think historically for many, many decades in this country, the American people seem to like, they liked the idea of divided government, where the president – so whereas this may be good for Republicans getting reelected to the House, it may very well be absent a real strong Republican presidential candidate, and maybe there isn't one yet, maybe. Maybe this helps Barack Obama.
When you say
they like the idea of having not putting all of your eggs in one basket, because look what happened when all the eggs were in the Republican basket,
right,
or all the eggs were in the Democratic basket. If you're a moderate or you're an independent, let's say you're an independent, you may not have liked either of those scenarios.
Right. Independents like to split their tickets. And I think my prediction early is that Barack's reelected, the Senate goes R and the House goes D. I think the Senate map's real good for the R's, but I think the idea of limited of divided government is popular.
Michael in Spokane, Washington, KXLY, one of our oldest affiliates and one of our longest listeners, right? You've been listening for many years, Michael.
Yeah, quite a few years, Bruce. Yeah, and welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be back. It was great to be away, but it's great to be back. It was a well-deserved vacation.
Good Italian weddings. Yeah, it's about 72 degrees here today in Spokane, so we had a mild day.
Well,
I know in Chicago it's hot.
You live in a very beautiful part of the country.
Yeah, thank God for that. But, you know, Bruce, if people are going to be asked to sacrifice on Medicare and Social Security, where is the sacrifice from our political leaders, be it Democrat or Republican? The sacrifice is not visible. Those in the U.S. House or Senate or the President all could reduce their salaries, their pensions, their benefits. Political sacrifice is not apparent.
Yeah, but again, the reality, Michael, is that, that would be such a minuscule drop in the bucket. I mean, even if everybody worked for 50% of what their salaries are. In fact, by the way, there are some United States senators, I believe, that turn their salaries back, some of the wealthier ones. But I think that you couldn't even find the savings if you looked at the budget.
It's not necessarily the savings, Bruce. It's the sacrifice, the apparent visible sacrifice that would help since most of us are going to...
Well, you're right about that. I mean, the perception does a lot, and
exactly.
You're right about that. I would have to think about exactly what would make me feel that someone is sacrificing.
Well, the Illinois state legislators voted to take furlough days, which is essentially a 10% pay cut, this year as part of that sense of symbolism or substance. So perhaps the callers, perhaps they're listening to him in Springfield.
Stan in Champaign, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey.
Hello.
Thanks, Bruce, for taking my call. I really don't know where to start, but I'm going to try to go back to the last half hour a little bit.
Surely.
One of your people said that the last Bush 43 budget deficit was like $600 billion, and that is just not true, and I wish you would correct these people when they don't tell the truth. Bush 43's last budget deficit was $1.3 trillion. He proposed that budget in 2008, and for you to hang that on President Barack Obama is just untrue. Typical of the diddlehead media putting out lies and misinformation, and I wish that you would correct that kind of stuff. Then there's the whole concept.
I believe that was our Tea Party. Tim, you were the one that said that.
That was on an average. I looked at it today on a 4-year average of $6 trillion. So before you get too excited, that's what I was referring to.
Okay, and $6 trillion is the amount of money that Bush...
$600 billion, I'm sorry.
It was $6 trillion that Bush 43 added to the national deficit.
Correct, over 8 years.
Over 8 years, it was
right.
5.7.
And what did Obama do in just under two?
Let me finish. You're talking over me, which is typical of the conservatives. It was $5.7 trillion.
Stan, one second. Stan, we do have to go to a break, but I'm going to put you on hold. And you're going to, you take a breath, and you got 3 minutes, and then when we come back, we'll join you, and you can finish your comment, okay? Stand by. 1-800-723-8029. Stan in Champaign is standing by. We'll hear more from him when we continue from Chicago. From Fond du Lac, Wisconsin to Keokuk, Iowa, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Let's go back to Stan the Man in Champaign, Illinois. He was right in the middle of a tirade against our Tea Party guest, Tim Krolaitis. So go ahead, Stan, you're back on. Go ahead.
Yeah, That would be Stan the Reasonable Man in Champaign, Illinois.
Okay.
I really look at things in a what I consider.
Hello? In a what?
Okay. Hang on me. I'm sorry. I heard a click. I thought you hung up on me.
No, we wouldn't do that.
Well, a lot of conservative voices do. This is the first time I've called you, Bruce. I appreciate your program, and I really appreciate being able to talk on your show.
Okay.
But anyway, when you compare the Bush 43 average deficit of $600 billion, which did not include $1.5 trillion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and all the rest of the off-budget spending that the Republicans did, you are being at best disingenuous, and you compare that to $600 billion, and then you go to Barack Obama's first deficit of $1.6 trillion and try to make a comparison, that makes everybody listening think that the Bush 43 deficit highest was $600 billion.
Stan, let me ask you a question right now about where we are now and where we are likely to go in the future. One of the things that the president, he issued a statement after his 80-minute visit with his congressional leaders. He said that there must be a budget deal within the next 10 days in order to meet an August 2nd deadline. I began the beginning of the program by asking whether or not our guest believed Tim Geithner when he painted this very dire picture of what will happen if the debt ceiling is not raised. In your view, right at this moment, based on people that you speak with, this is the voice of Champaign, Illinois speaking right now, what in your view do you believe will happen in this battle between the Republicans and the Democrats and the Tea Party folks? Where does it come down in your view? Hello, are you there? Stan, believe it or not, I did not cut you off, and I don't know what happened to you, but you're not there, and one will have to just ponder
you are in
the rest of the
now,
evening.
Stan.
I did not cut him off.
Stan, the disconnected
We did not cut him off, right?
I think he was using a cell phone or something.
He was using a cell phone. Anyway, well, let's go to Eddie in Chicago. He's been standing by a long time. Then we're going to New Hampshire. Go ahead, Eddie.
Yeah, I'm in Chicago.
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, gentlemen. You know, if we want to get more Minnesotas than Illinois, we're going to be voting Democratic. I think Mrs. Lagarde was muscled in by the Obama, so the IMF can get us some money that, in case we don't get any of these tax revenues that they want.
Would you like to comment on that, Mr. Varonis? I don't know. I think we're speechless. Are you there? We're having a problem. We've lost a second caller in a row. Let us know. Maybe the calls will work better if we go to Grantham, New Hampshire, where Steve is listening to us on WNTK, an affiliate of this broadcast since 1992 during the Clinton primary in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Steve.
Bruce, are you coming to New Hampshire this year?
I'm coming to New Hampshire next year.
Okay, we'll look forward to seeing you.
And I'm going to Iowa next month.
Okay. A few things. And I'm definitely Democratic or more progressive-leaning.
Mm-hmm.
I try to look at this on a nonpartisan basis. I'm in the financial service business.
Uh-huh.
I have several different points. The first one is, it seems to me inconceivable that we as a country and the Republican Party would be putting in danger the creditworthiness of the United States. It doesn't make any sense. And if you recall back in 08, and this is a big difference between Democrats and Republicans. In 08, when Paulson realized that we had a potential economic collapse, you know, when the credit markets froze,
mm-hmm.
he came up with not a really great, well, you know, a three-page program, and obviously there had to be changes to it, but basically he came up with a TARP-type program. And I believe the Senate did pass it, but the House did not pass it. And that day, the stock market went down, I believe, 777 points.
Right.
If you recall, it was with bipartisan Democratic support. Without Democratic support, if Democrats had the same philosophy that Republicans do in terms of not working with the other side for possible political gain rather than the benefit of the country, if the Democrats had acted that way, we probably would have had a financial collapse in 08. And I give credit to the Bush administration for recognizing what may have been occurring. I give blame for it happening to begin with, but once they realized and we were shooting in the dark about new things, they came up with a program, and Democrats did support it. They put their politics below what was necessary, unfortunately, what was necessary for the benefit of the country. Mm-hmm. It also seems to me David Brooks is certainly
Ask you just one? This is it's got a political edge to it, but I keep coming back to it because the Democrats have been making this very strong point now that you know you don't go to the brink, you don't say you're going to vote to raise the debt ceiling, but yet when he was a United States Senator, Barack Obama on principle,
I know he voted against it.
He vehemently
thought against it when there was no chance that it would be voted down.
Okay, so it was
political theater.
It was political theater other than reality.
Correct. Now the other thing is several things. David Brooks. And Bruce Bartlett, who are certainly conservatives. Bartlett was in the Reagan administration. Mm-hmm. David Brooks, certainly a conservative commentator, mm-hmm. basically said the Republicans have won this. Take the deal. I mean, it is not the end of the world to have some sort of tax increases or minimize some tax preferences, such as 15% carried interest, where hedge fund managers who have made billions of dollars, not creating anything worthwhile for the economy, mm-hmm. just managing money, mm-hmm. are getting taxed at capital gains rather than what they really should be taxed at, which is ordinary income.
That's right.
So, and then the other last point is, I believe that two points. The Tea Party person, Tim, and, you know,
yes.
More power to you. But if you talk about the amount of the deficit that has occurred under Obama, you are intellectually dishonest for the following reason. What's the number one reason? It's not the stimulus. That's the number one reason that we have enormous deficits.
Wars.
It was the 2008 recession, which cut taxes substantially.
Well, if you listen back to my comment, it wasn't defending Bush. It was.
No, I'm not saying you were defending
right,
Bush.
Right,
right. You were criticizing Obama, though.
Well, I was criticizing both,
sir,
and that's part of the problem.
Yeah, well,
I mean, you're looking at it through your Democratic spectacles.
No,
my friend over here is looking through
the
Republican spectacles, and that's why we got nothing going on. That's why we got, you know, we're going to be edging up on $14 trillion in debt and $50 trillion of unfunded mandates.
You're ignoring why there's an enormous amount of deficit today. It is that we have had a substantial reduction in tax revenues because incomes are lower for most people.
Well, then why don't we do what John F. Kennedy did? And what Ronald Reagan did, and lower taxes and increase revenue
that.
Into the Treasury.
You know, I am
we
really
don't want
happy
to talk about
it.
That.
This is my last point. And, Bruce, thank you for all this time. I appreciate it. My last point is everybody talks about Ronald Reagan. Actually, Ronald Reagan had a great 1986 tax bill. But Ronald Reagan raised taxes several times. He lowered taxes and he raised taxes. I don't understand. I understand the politics of it. But for the benefit of the country, I don't understand this fixation that under all circumstances, the only thing that will fix our economic problems are tax cuts. We had the Bush tax cuts. They weren't. They didn't fix our
economic
problems.
We had the spending, sir. It's the spending.
But well, that was primarily, and the previous caller was correct.
I don't care who it is. That's the point.
Okay.
That's why we're digging our heels in right now, because
you
got Democrats and Republicans alike that don't want to cut spending.
What spending would you cut?
Go across the board. You pick it.
No, you pick it. You tell me, who are you going to cut from? You going to cut farm subsidies?
Sure.
Okay, good. I agree with you on that. You going to cut education spending?
Sure.
Yeah,
that's nice.
That
how about we
good...
start doing what we said we're doing when we got to address the bloated governments and a lot of the fat and the pork and everything else that politicians like to talk about but never do? Why don't you start there? I mean,
everybody's
talking about, oh, my God, they're going to come for our Social Security. Well, maybe
Bruce
if the same people that are here to fix it wouldn't have spent the money, we wouldn't even have to worry about that.
What Bruce said earlier was absolutely true. You're talking about peanuts in terms of the whole thing. What, you know, are you going to, I'll tell you what, I also live in South Florida. You know, they have a cut-in for hurricane. Do you think it's worthwhile having the satellites to track hurricanes and where they're going and where they may be going? Is that a worthwhile expense? Is that something we should be cutting?
I don't know about satellites, sir. I really can't.
No, I mean, we have a hurricane control center. Should that be disbanded?
Yeah, sure. Let's disband it all. What's your point? I mean, everybody can go down and pick their favorite little thing and say, no, we can't cut here. No, we can't cut. You know what? Let's not cut. Let's keep going.
Maybe to a certain extent we can actually raise taxes a little bit to pay for programs that are worthwhile.
So you think it's a tax revenue problem?
I think it's a combination. I think it's a combination of spending. I think the entitlement.
Well,
to the 77%
of America disagrees with you, sir.
Well, you know what? Was it? A sucker is born every. Who is
right.
the sucker?
Well,
is
I'm
born
glad
every
you're day. Not. And you're the smart guy, and the rest
I'm
of us.
I don't know if I am or not.
All right.
But I think that your solution is very naive.
Okay, John F. Kennedy and Ronald Reagan don't think so.
But and by the way, Steve will be voting in the New Hampshire primary. Now, let me ask you a question, Steve. Since are you still there?
Yes.
Steve, since there is not likely to be any challenge to Barack Obama, and
right.
you've identified yourself as a Democrat or a more
sure.
progressive thinker, yeah. Will you be mischievous, and might you run over and vote in the Republican primary?
No, I can't because I'm a Florida resident.
Oh, you can't? Okay.
Right.
So you will be voting in Florida.
Right.
So will you be doing it in Florida?
I think in Florida they don't have...
That's closed primary.
Closed right. primary. Okay, so you can't do that in Florida.
Right.
Okay, very good. All right, thanks very much for your call, 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we're going to take some more calls, and we're going to talk a little bit about the impact of this debate on the Republican presidential field and whether or not, with each passing day, does Michelle Bachmann become more and more a serious contender. From St. Cloud, Minnesota to Cincinnati, Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway on America's Great Talk Radio Stations, as well as Sirius and XM Satellite Radio. Nice to have you with us this Sunday night. Our liberal Democrat this evening is Dan Johnson Weinberger. He is a progressive lobbyist and also a partner in a law firm in the city of Chicago and a graduate of the University of Chicago Law School, undergraduate at the University of Illinois, where his good friend and political sparring partner was Chris Veronis, who joins us here this evening. He is a public relations executive with ESOP Communications. That is his new firm. And he is dealing with, is looking for new clients all the time. Is that correct?
All the time.
It just looked you up, ESOP.
24/7. Yep.
And you just look you up.
ESOPgroup.com.
There we go. And also with us this evening is Tim Krolitis. He is the Illinois Tea Party leader from Will County. That's in western rural. It's not suburban. It's rural.
Right.
Rural. Do they call it rural?
Well, Joliet would be urban.
Yeah, or it's Collar. It's Collar County.
Yes, Collar County.
County, but it's the western part of west of the city of Chicago for those people listening around the country. And also, you are in the construction business.
Yes, sir.
And how is the construction business?
We're hurting.
Yeah.
We're hurting. It's pretty tough.
One of the hardest hit sectors.
Oh, yeah.
In the
yeah,
economy.
It's probably, they said about right now, last I saw was 18% unemployment.
When Tim Geithner, who at the beginning of the program said you didn't necessarily believe when he talked about the dire predictions of what would happen if the debt ceiling is not raised, you questioned his credibility on that point. But what about his broader point that we're in for a long, long haul? To me, that was the real big headline that most people who are not maybe tied into all the politics of what
right.
he was talking about. I mean, the Treasury Secretary was painting a very bleak picture about the turnaround in the economy not being on the horizon.
I think that we need to take our medicine. I really do. I think it's like our economy and where we've been going as a nation financially, it's like a heroin addict. And we turn around and the heroin addict needs to fix. And now we got two parties turning around going, well, you know what? If we don't give them the fix, they're not going to feel real good. But in the meantime, the heroin addict stays a heroin addict. And I think the bigger picture is we got a bigger problem. And the bigger problem is $14 trillion in debt and $50 trillion in unfunded mandates. And somebody has to start, like you mentioned before, stop kicking that can down the road. And this is one chance to dig our heels in and do something that's right. And I think Geithner is playing politics.
But you say you want to dig your heels in. The president has said he wants a $4 trillion. Now, you argue you don't think it's a real savings. But he wants a bigger plan than the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
What does that say?
Not necessarily, because he's talking about tax increases as well.
But that's the deficit.
Right. But now how do you affect the economy? I mean, all this is tied together, guys. How does that affect the economy by increasing taxes?
So this is the fundamental issue with the Tea Party economic view of our country is that it's not really about the deficit or the debt. Because if it were, then the best way to do it would involve some balance of tax increases and spending cuts. But that's off the table. Instead, it's this view, which has no data to support it, but that if somehow government gets ever smaller to the point of maybe disappearing altogether, then and only then will our economy grow stronger, which Tim is right. That's the point of it all, is to have a strong economy. My final question is this. In a Tea Party movement where you understand how tough construction has been, and you know we're investing less in our infrastructure than Europe and China, half of Europe, a third of China, shouldn't we be spending our money on building things here that are good for everybody, like roads and rail and schools, to put the construction industry back to work?
Why would
So you want to accrue more debt, dig into the taxpayers' pockets even further to do that, instead of letting the private sector be able to create that by allowing them to expand?
You know, they say insanity is seeing Washington play its game inside the Beltway. We're seeing it here at this table with what Dan is saying. Dan just told the viewers of this program that he wants to punish capital formation, risk-taking, investment through new taxes. If he had his way, he would give a death sentence to the small businesses of the United States. He would pass. If you're trying to make ends meet with a small business, you're going to get a tax bill, a hefty one, thanks to Dan. And Dan wouldn't stop there. He would increase spending even more beyond what we're doing. So he would actually go against his own party, against his own president, who's looking for something on the scale of $2 trillion in deficit reduction.
Because
it's ridiculous.
The question is this. Do you want a prosperous economy close to full employment like we had, under a Democratic president, President Bill Clinton, when the tax rate on the people with the money, which are the millionaires, which are the people that have all the wealth in this country, we have the most unequal distribution of wealth since the 1920s. Is a 40% tax rate.
Find his faith in balanced budgets.
Is a 40% tax rate on money earned above $1 million. Is that punishing people or is that investing in our country, investing in Americans? I think kicking old people off of Social Security and Medicare, I don't think it makes us stronger. I think it makes us weaker. So I go back to the one point. If the point here...
Now, do you really believe that any political party is actually going to kick old people off the
You're right. I got a little hyperbolic.
Yeah.
I'll withdraw the statement, Bruce.
Right. Thank you.
So my question is this.
Guilty.
If the idea is full employment, is that more important than having a smaller government to you, Tim, as a Tea Party? As a Tea Party movement, I want to know, which is more important? Smaller government or full employment?
Isn't that what Barack Obama told us?
That's a bizarre question.
Why is that a bizarre question?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you.
That's what the stimulus is supposed to do, Dan.
Because it's not about the government, man. The federal government is way too bloated. Because of their spending, it's put us in this situation. Okay? What you need to do, what we feel, is to free up the private sector to get out of the way. Okay? What the federal government has done is extended its tentacles for decades. And how's that proven for us?
In other words,
and then you turn around and you cry to the same people.
Why isn't the Tea Party movement or leaders in the Tea Party, why are they not more anti-war? Not all war, but, three at once, maybe four.
Mega military spending?
Where is your outrage on that?
For example, this latest one, where's the outrage on the left for Libya? But I think what happens...
Well, there is some, but it's more vocal than it is, from the Tea Party movement.
Right.
And I don't like to say that the Tea Party movement is all right of center. I'm just saying where is the outrage on that? You know, there's outrage against, spending too much money on the illegal immigrants. There's too much money spent on welfare welfare too much anymore. Foreign aid. But, where is the outrage on spending too much money on too many wars in too many different regions?
Well, I think, Dan asked earlier, would you guys be willing to consider that? And you have to. You have to look at that, how involved we are and stuff. But the federal government, one of its main purposes is to protect us. okay? So hence the our protection as a conservative, and I'm talking as a conservative Tea Partier, is to kind of defend the military. But obviously there's bloated budgets and everything else in there that could be taken care of. So there should be nothing that can't be on the table.
But it is off the table by most Tea Party people and most Republicans. I mean,
many Republicans. I don't know about most Tea Party people. Let's go to Fred in Austin, Texas. KLBJ is the place. Go ahead. You're on the air. Nice to hear from Texas tonight.
Having fun with this whole conversation. I started this out with the idea of we ought to have a website where every American gets to decide how he's going to cut the budget by his share of the deficit, whatever our however many thousand bucks it is a year, each of us going in $4,500 or whatever. But I've refined this while I'm thinking about it, too. It would be a great thing to say to each of the congressmen. There's about 400 congressmen, a little more than that, and there's about a 1,600 times a billion deficit we're talking about. So each congressman would have to come up with $4 billion of his own personal cuts that he'd take out of the budget, and they'd be cumulative. It wouldn't be like, you know, that you agree with some other congressman, that's the $4 billion you take out. Each one takes out $4 billion and names it, and you get the thing to zero. And if we put that challenge to them, and, you know, somebody had some news organization or something put up the website and said, all right, you guys want to balance the budget, name your $4 billion. And it can be $4 billion in new taxes. It can be $4 billion in quit spending. I don't care. Where's your $4 billion coming from?
That's a neat idea.
Each of the congressmen is done, we set up a new budget.
Go ahead. It's an interesting idea. And I thought where you were going, and maybe this is the mechanism that would be used, but, you know, it still is in effect, I believe, and that is the debt closure commission. This was the commission, you know, because nobody, when it came to cutting military bases in the United States, even though some people talked about wanting to close the bases, the reality was they never wanted to close a base in their own backyard because it employed too many people, and those people voted, and they could either vote for or against a member of Congress. And so the commission was set up so that an independent body would Republicans and Democrats, they determined which bases would be cut. They did it based on realistic assessment of what was needed and what was not needed. And the members of Congress, they all had to vote for it, for or against it. There were no amendments, up or down. You have to take it all. And there was pain. There was a lot of pain. There was a lot of sacrifice. But everybody had the cover. If you can create the political cover, even in this situation now, if you could create political cover for Republicans and Democrats, they could resolve this issue and every other significant issue we have in the country. But they've got to be covered. You know why? Because they want to get reelected. So that pain, that sacrifice, it's got to be shared. If they can figure that out, they can figure anything out. Back shortly. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to Mike in Schaumburg listening to us on the flagship station. WLS, the radio home of Don Wade and Roma. Go ahead.
Bruce, the way I understand, I should give you a disclaimer that I didn't tell the screener. I attended three Tea Party rallies, so I guess I'm a Tea Party kind of guy.
Okay.
All right. So I guess the way I understand it, what Obama wants is he's offering up $4 trillion in cuts in entitlement programs for bunches of new tax increases. So... and this is it. We're going to nip it in the bud. We're going to take care of the problem now. So when does the balance budget get balanced under his plan, and when do we reduce the debt to about, let's say, 20% of GDP? Does anybody have that?
I don't know off the top of my head. But the
I don't think anybody
it's
has
only,
that.
Well, the plan is a 10-year plan.
10 years.
The $4 trillion is over 10 years.
Right. But so that doesn't pay off anything.
That is correct.
And the key is.
So it doesn't fix anything.
Well, the key is economic growth. That's the ultimate key.
That's why you don't want tax increase.
Right.
Well, if you.
You'd probably get more growth if you leave people alone.
Or if you hire teachers to make our country smarter.
Oh, more teachers. Oh, yeah. Okay, I got it. I'm sorry.
Sector right. employees.
Right.
We spend $16,000 per pupil in the Chicagoland area.
Not in every suburb. Many of those suburbs are a third of that.
In Chicago.
Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah, in the city of Chicago, we do.
Yeah, we do.
That's right.
Should we spend? Should we have some numbers for a change from these libs?
But you're not arguing against teachers, though. Are you?
I don't think I made an argument against teachers.
No.
I made an argument against prolific spending education.
So this is the fantasy, is that we can have government spending cuts that do not result in increased unemployment and actually...
The fantasy is you can keep doing what we're doing and not kill the economy and somehow pay off the debt.
That's
not going to happen.
How about this? Will you acknowledge that when you cut government spending, you increase unemployment?
I increase employment in areas that are probably inefficiently functioning.
That's why
we spent $250,000 for each and every job created by the stimulus. Now, it is impossible to believe that each one of those jobs created more than $250,000 of GDP.
That statistic
is
incorrect.
That's why we're going
backwards. All right, but you will at least acknowledge this one. When you reduce government spending, public sector employment drops. Is that true or false? That's just a simple question.
What I want from the government is a plan that says,
so the answer
yes,
is true.
We need public services, we need education, we need defense, we need NASA that honors the Muslim contribution to science. We need all that stuff. All I want is a plan that says if we raise taxes and we do this and we do that, our best guess is we're going to pay off the deficit and my grandchildren will not have $25 trillion in debt in 5 years. We're going to pay it off in 10, 15. Pick a number.
Chris,
lay out this plan and make some halfway credible academic source or the CBO or anybody believe it. But all I've heard is we want more taxes because the Republicans are not compromising.
Chris Verosa.
Well, if they compromise and give up every advantage that they have.
Let's talk about fantasy here with Dan's prescription for reducing the deficit. On one hand, Dan would address the deficit by increasing spending. On the other hand, he doesn't acknowledge, he ignores the fact that his own tax proposals, his corporate jet write-offs, would result in job loss. There is an industry that services, employs, manufactures these jets. Does anyone remember the yacht tax in 1990?
Right.
What happened there? Thousands of people were
lost
unemployed,
their jobs.
And the industry left the country.
Veronis,
overseas.
Veronis, you're shameless.
Dan wants a bailout for public sector unions.
Veronis,
he wants to increase spending, and he wants to reduce jobs.
In other words,
in the private sector.
Veronis is
insanity.
Shameless,
insanity.
Shameless, shameless. Veronis is shameless insistence on corporate tax breaks above the national interest is best demonstrated by embracing corporate tax cuts. I would just say one final thing. The point is you put your spending and your tax revenues on what creates full employment. And don't hold on to some general idea that small government is good and tax cuts are good, because that is intellectually
childish. By
raising childish.
Spending and killing jobs. Thank you.
That's
Dan.
Childish.
Austin, Texas, KLBJ. Bill, last caller of the night. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate being the last caller. That way nobody can yell at me afterwards. Hey, I don't like the idea of counting the last least bit of spending that Bush did after Barack had been elected, and he went along with the whole government tarp and all that other stuff. I don't believe that counting that against the deficit, because he went along with Democrats, that shouldn't count against the total.
All right, we'll take that out. He's still got an abysmal record.
His average record should be somewhere around $300 billion a year, not $600 billion a year, because of all that extra.
Look at the CBO reports on your computer. It'll prove
me?
Other. Look at the CBO reports on your.
Yeah, they're
your
counting
computer.
The. They're counting the stupid Democrat spending he did after Barack got elected, which is what Barack wanted.
$300 billion, $600 billion. You put them
trillion.
Together,
trillion.
That's a lot of money.
But there's another thing here too,
potato,
Bruce.
Potato.
You know what? We're out of time. The good thing about being the last caller, nobody can be on after you. The bad thing about the last caller, when this theme song starts playing, we gotta go. Kenny Rehmeyer is going to be following us certainly on KLBJ in Austin, Texas. One of the best talk radio hosts in the country. He follows us every Sunday night. Our thanks this evening to Chris Varonis and Tim Krolaitis. And